Good afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Nick Bear.
Mom Daisy Gwen, spring is finally here. I am your co-host, Nolan Altvater, and for Wabanaki peoples, the spring equinox marks the beginning of our new year after a long winter rest. And I'm excited to celebrate this season with you all with our discussion today around what sustainable cultural economic development looks like within our homelands here in what is now Maine. To explore this topic, we have the honor of talking with three Wabanaki leaders in this area. Francis Auchtoma, who is a Passamaquoddy creator and the collaborative fund manager for the Wabanaki Commission on Land and Stewardship. Matthew Lewis, who is a citizen of the Passamaquoddy tribe at Zibayig and the director of Four Directions Development Corporation. And Nick Francis, a Penobscot Nation citizen and director of the Wabanaki Community Foundation. Before we have our guests introduce themselves and their work, we first want to start with appreciating the land. Nick, do you mind opening us up in a good way?
We recognize the strong Wabanaki women who introduced our communities to their perspectives and voices with this show. It is our duty to honor them as best we can with the reignition of this work. In the spring, our people celebrate the awakening of our lands after sleeping all winter under snow. It is a beautiful and busy time in Wabanaki country. Whether it is maple syrup tapping or fishing along the coastlines, our people find joy in these little ceremonies. This show has become a ceremony of my own every month, and it is a privilege to be involved with it. We are proud of where our seeds were planted. These roots connect us to our past relations and their knowledge systems. We are a support for all of our people. We have a responsibility to the communities we come from to provide spaces where all voices can be heard and embraced. It is an honor to be a part of this kind of work, and I am humbled by the opportunity to connect with my Wabanaki relatives in a new way that only could have been in my ancestors' wildest dreams. Psidegeg Nidui Nudnamin Dakmiguk Chiwiliwan Ndelbemwak.
Aho, Willy Woon, Nick. Now, to start off our conversation together, I want to invite our guests to introduce themselves and ask them, how would you describe your organization to a Wabanaki community member? Matt, do you mind starting us off?
Sure. Thank you, Nolan, and thank you, Nick. It's great to be here sharing this space with you and having some great colleagues on the show as well. Four Directions is a native-led community development organization that works with the Wabanaki Nations. Our role is to support economic opportunity in our communities, whether that's starting a business, buying or fixing a home, building financial skills, or supporting community projects. We provide access to capital in the form of loans and grants, and financial education in the form of business advising and home ownership counseling. The goal is to help families and communities build long-term stability and self-determination. Four Directions was formed just under 25 years ago from Penobscot Nation to address the housing challenges that the nation faced. Access to mortgage capital was non-existent. Or very sparse. It made it difficult for citizens to buy homes through mortgage loans. So Four Directions was born out of that need and addresses that need by working with the nations to come up with lending laws and codes that allow us to provide loans to tribal citizens. Since then, we've expanded into supporting Native entrepreneurs as well as the tribal nations themselves and some of their community development projects. So very excited to be here, and again, thank you for this time and space.
Yeah, Willy Woon, Matt, important resources for the community, especially around purchasing homes in today's market. So Willie won for explaining that. Francis, do you mind going next?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Wabanaki Commission on Land and Stewardship is a relatively new organization, I think, in the landscape of Wabanaki-led nonprofits. Seems like every day there are more and more of us popping up. So we got our footing, I think, in 2017, when members of the conservation community and Wabanaki educators, leadership, knowledge carriers came together to see if there was a way that we could collaborate to expand access to lands, or access to our homelands. And so we formalized our nonprofit status in about 2024. And through this kind of ongoing relationship, we identified three key areas that we wanted to work on. So broadly, we're working towards rematriation in our homelands, but we're doing that by expanding Wabanaki access to our homelands through land return, cultural access projects, as well as a caretaking fund that supports land-based work in our communities. And so currently we've got, I think it was maybe 11 land return projects that are currently as part of our strategic land return efforts with the conservation community. Over half of them have been fully funded or in the process of being returned. And so we work across a variety of areas to support that work. And so far, all of those land return projects have been directly back to the tribes, whether it's through purchasing and returning the land or through transferring lands to our tribal communities.
Well, they won. Nick, do you want to end us off here?
Yeah, thanks again to Nolan and Nick for having us. And it's an honor to sit here with Matt and Francis. My name is Nick Francis, a Penobscot citizen, father of two. I am the executive director of the Wabanaki Community Foundation. And essentially, our foundation's role is to gather and steward these resources or financial resources for our communities, which will be guided by our self-defined values and priorities. A little history to our organization. A couple of years ago, there was a project up north in Great Northern Woods, and EFI, Elliottsville Foundation, and Lucas and Claire approached the tribes to figure out some sort of representation from our communities to add essentially attribution to that contact station out there, which will fall right in a traditional Penobscot homeland. So he leaned into the Abbey Museum's model of two representatives from each community, and he asked us if we'd be willing to be part of this project, again, to make sure that proper attribution is included within the space up there. And so after a couple of years and the project coming to a completion, there was a donor that a couple of donors that graciously provided significant donation to our advisory council to figure out what we could do with it or given it over to us to help support our communities, but we deliberated on what we should be doing with this money. And we came out with the idea of seeding a community foundation to respond to the needs and aspirations of our community. We all recognize something very important that our communities have always had the vision, the leadership, and the solutions, but what is lacking is access to flexible, long-term financial resources. And so we view our role again is to steward or to gather and steward these resources for our communities. And a couple of our pillars of work that we plan to do with this community foundation is to, of course, invest in our people, in our communities by providing grants and direct support. And that also includes building up our internal capacity in order to be a resource of fiscally sponsoring smaller Wabanaki nonprofits that need a little footing to get going or individuals. Another one is we aim to hopefully convene all Wabanaki nonprofits in order for us to get a more clear role or clear understanding of the priorities already in place and to help support everybody doing the good work. And also to kind of push the or to try to find shared strategies in order to respond to the needs and aspirations of our community and people. And then hopefully just build the corpus of our endowment in order to be that permanent fund that can support our communities into the future. So in essence, this is another exercise, just like the other two entities on this call, of self-determination, and but now we're entering into the philanthropic sector, and trying to again just be that resource for our people and community. So again, thank you for having me.
Leo and Nick. So we are going to get right into the individual questions. Francis, I want to give you some more time to explain the grant-making program the commission offers to the community. Can you say a little more about the importance of the funds and its relation to land return? And potentially share what some projects that the grant has already supported.
Yeah, absolutely. So the title of our caretaking fund gets its name from the Passamaquoddy language. It is the Wulundi-Yoodmenay Gizi Abaajiyewik Fund, which translates into English as the "Let Us Take Good Care of What Has Been Returned" fund. So the fund was developed with the support of the conservation community and First Light, which is the non-native arm of the work that we do. For Wabanaki communities that helps bridge the gaps between non-Native people doing similar work to us and Wabanaki communities overall. And so the fund was developed with this idea that although we're working towards land return, the work that we need to do as Wabanaki people doesn't stop once the land is returned, right? We're land-based cultures. And so as we're looking at what to do once we re receive that restored access to our homelands, it became abundantly clear that we needed a fund that was going to be able to support that work. And so the purpose of our fund is to provide unrestricted funding, first of all, to Wabanaki tribal governments, Wabanaki NGOs, and Wabanaki individuals. Maine is a very small funding state. I think my other Wabanaki nonprofit leaders here will agree. And so we created this fund with the idea that it would be unrestricted to fit the needs of the Wabanaki communities as we decide that we need it to, as we need it to be. And to make sure that it's something that's going to be ongoing. So currently we're in our second year, actually in the sec middle of our second application period. We haven't even gone through our full review process yet. And we're wrapping that up right now with our Wabanaki Advisory Committee. So our process too, it's a participatory grant making process. So it's not just people applying in a small group of people deciding whether or not your applications are worth funding. So we have two people from each tribal community who are appointed by members of our commission. And so through our process, they go and they review all of the applications, and we decide together as a collective how best to divide up that money across the different organizations and individuals. And so we are pretty broad in the types of projects that we're funding. So last year we had, the Mi'kmaq Cultural Department. So the Mi'kmaq Nation, they sought funding to create an ethnobotanical conservancy on tribal lands for communities to learn about indigenous plant knowledge and ethnobotany. We had the, as from our NGOs, we had the Zabaiag Resilience Committee. So they were formed in 2022 following a community resilience meeting where tribal members voted to prioritize a number of goals. But a lot of their work focuses on community response to environmental and climate change pressures. And so very broadly there, we are supporting their work. especially as they're working to implement a residential weatherization initiative, residential heat pump initiative, and purchasing of bulk solar panels and community powered solar projects. From our individuals, we had so many individuals apply. We're one of the only grant making programs that does fund individuals in the state. And so from Penobscot Nation, we have Jasmine Thompson Tintor. Jasmine, she's working on restoring, I guess, teachings around traditional Wabanaki food ways, and is working to build an outdoor kitchen in that community to support and foster a place for connection, reclaiming traditional cooking and cultural practices. And the idea and the vision that she has is that it will be a space that people can come to at any time to sort of practice that traditional knowledge. And hers is, I think, a project that's going to be multi-years in the making as she brings Wabanaki communities, our Wabanaki communities together within Penobscot Nation homelands to learn and pass on that knowledge. And I think the last one that I want to highlight is another individual, Matt Dana. So Matt Dana the second. There are two of them from the Passamaquoddy tribe at Madokmigug. But through his project, he was looking to provide Passamaquoddy tribal youth with knowledge and access to traditional food and medicine sources. And through his work, he incorporates ceremony, language, and history associated with those activities. One of the hopes that he had for his project was to create seasonal learning opportunities for Passamaquoddy youth to harvest up to 500 pounds of animal protein, including moose, deer, muskrat, ruffed grouse, and various fish, while also sharing their successful harvest with elders in the community and for seasonal gatherings.
That's a lot of incredible work, Francis. Thank you for explaining that. And could you say the title of the project one more time?
Yeah, so it's a long one. Our
It is.
languages they're so verb based that it I think for those who aren't used to it can be a mouthful. But the title of the fund is the Wulunke Yodimene Gizi Abajiyewik Fund, the Let Us Take Good Care of What Has Returned Fund.
Ah, Leon, I really like that. Thank you. Okay, Matt, I saw that Four Directions recently presented their strategic plans for a comprehensive economic development strategy and the Wabanaki Cultural Tourism Initiative. Do you mind sharing a little more about these plans and how you are approaching it as an organization?
Yeah, certainly. So I think, before it's important to sort of frame up how we got to where we are. It's important to recognize that the Wabanaki nations are exactly that. They're sovereign nations, responsible for the health, safety, education, and economic well-being of their tribal citizens. That's a big task to take on as a governing body. And one of Four Directions' role again has been to support economic development in these communities. And it was around 2019 when Four Directions reached out to all of the tribal community leadership, chiefs, councils, department directors, just understanding what the communities needed and where we could help, the Four Directions could help and support. And one of the themes that we heard was, more work around cultural tourism. There was a big need to, support cultural tourism as an economic development tool, but also in a respectful and meaningful way, because the state was also interested in supporting cultural tourism for the Wabanaki Nations, and so we served as somewhat of a conduit. For that. And it's important because the state wanted to engage in the Wabanaki culture, but having it from their voice was not appropriate. So it was important for us to take on this initiative and support the tribal communities. And in that space, we found that the tribes just didn't have the capacity at the time. They had their individual cultural departments. However, taking on a wider, cultural narrative of the Wabanaki was just something that that they needed help with. So that's how we got engaged with it in the beginning, back in 2019. It's something we've been doing for quite some time. But I think that's when it was truly in earnest, a place that we could play a role in developing the strategy. And over time, we came up with a plan on how to get feedback from tribal communities, because that was the most important thing, was understanding what the communities wanted, and what they didn't want either. I think that's an important component of it as well. Tourism is somewhat of a pejorative term. It can feel like it's exploitive of a destination, and we wanted to avoid that at all costs. So understanding what communities wanted to see for tourism, but also what they wanted excluded and how they were represented, and really controlling that narrative at the community level was very important for us. So this was a thoughtful strategic plan that we implemented over several years. It was about a 3-year process where there was a lot of community engagement, stakeholder meetings. We had summits, and really informed that plan. And from that, we developed a strategic plan that we unveiled about 2024. And since then, we've been in the implementation phase, and we've developed community-based cultural tourism fellows that are appointed by tribal leadership. Those fellows continue that community engagement, which is so critical and important to the success of the plan. Again, having that community engaged in forming and protecting the culture is extremely important, because we want to do this in a respectful and mindful way. And I also think it's important that these stories and that voice comes from us. So the strategic plan is in its second year of implementation. There's been a lot of great movement. We just had a opening up in Houlton for a visitor center that features all five tribal communities and their artisans, which is fantastic. Something that, as folks are getting off I-95 at the very end of it, they're welcomed with the center, and it says, welcome to Wabanaki territory. That's a huge part of this narrative, is letting people know that they are in Wabanaki territory. And that's been a big push for this initiative, is to just kind of have that awareness. Some of the next important components of the project are creating a visitor guide, something that informs visitors on how to respectfully engage with the culture. Again, being mindful of not exploiting where we are and some of the natural sites that are part of our culture. Again, kind of that other component is there's certain sacred sites that the tribes didn't want to have tourism engage with, and that's a huge component of this. So that's something that we're very excited to, again, be facilitators of. Four Directions, we don't see ourselves as being the leader of this. We see ourselves as facilitating the community, and really having them amplify their voice. So that kind of led to some other ideas of what are some other economic development opportunities for the tribes, not just in cultural tourism, which is a big part of economic, a big part of communities and their economic development plans. There's other opportunities as well. And that's where we got the idea of a Wabanaki-wide economic development strategy. And there's a lot of opportunity for the Wabanaki to work together collectively. And one of the first components of it was never to supplant or overtake what each individual community does and their economic endeavors. But there's opportunities, for them to collectively work together, find some economic opportunities for them to engage in, and to streamline some of the things. One of the things we found was that, each tribe has, their own department for, this or that. Is there a way or a collective need to create, maybe one department that all five communities can engage with? Is there an opportunity for these economies of scale? Why do something five times, when you can do it once and do it really well and put a lot of resources into it? So that really kind of generated this idea of creating this economic development strategy on, are there industries? The tribes are very natural resource based. Are there industries in aquaculture or forestry that the tribes could work together and leverage their resources. Could there be like a Wabanaki sawmill that processes wood, or a Wabanaki trucking company that brings goods from each community to market? So there's a lot of great opportunities, but there wasn't really anything that codified or defined what that looked like. So we spent, again, the last several years working through this economic development strategy, again, engaging with tribal leaders and community members. And we just made it publicly available for community members to engage with. We're in a public comment period where folks can read that document, provide feedback, and really guide and shape how that takes sh how we move forward with it. So each community, we've posted it on each community's social media pages. We have it posted on our website. And I'm just excited to get the community's feedback and then again take it into that next phase, that implementation phase. Yeah, it's just really exciting stuff. Happy to dive in more, answer any more questions.
No, that was great. And just already hearing like you and Francis in dialogue with each other and like the specific approach to economic development that is clearly community based and community engaged and built from that bottom up rather than top down approach to it. Just thank you for sharing that. I do want to take a moment to remind our listeners that you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nolan Altvater, along with my co-host Nick Baer. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are talking with Francis Auchtoma, Matthew Lewis, and Nick Francis about what sustainable cultural economic development looks like in our homelands here in what is now Maine. And Matt and Francis just shared a little bit more about their organizations and specific projects that they have going on. And I'd like now to open the mic to Nick Francis. I understand that the Wabanaki Community Foundation is, a new organization, but also kind of takes a approach that really strives to fund future generations of Wabanaki people. And I was hoping if you could share what this may look like and sort of the specific approach to the development of the organization and taking a foundation approach to economic development.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, our eyes are definitely on the long game. With that said, similar to Francis, we are going to create a grant program probably at the end of the year, probably next year in 2027. But to respond to your question, I feel a foundation approach means and allows us to gather resources and steward them and grow them responsibly to ultimately reinvest them back into our Wabanaki communities year after year. And so examples of that are our first initial thoughts. And everything that Matt said was and Francis is quite exciting for Wabanaki country. But we look to partner with entities kind of like Four Directions, invest and explore if we could assist in, say, housing initiatives that obviously will help families build that kind of stability and equity within our own homelands. Another kind of approach or kind of goal of ours is to assist in cultural or language revitalization efforts, whether that be fiscally sponsoring language institutes that are trying to get up and going, or just the community-based language teachers or mentors. And another example is investing in our youth. We've heard part of our sit-down with tribal chiefs and leaders is we heard youth development, youth athletics, and secondary education support for our people going out and getting that secondary education. But there was also these kind of moments or these instances of Financial barriers that lead our people to quit school. So, we've heard stories of flat tires or just not having money to socially participate in the experience that is college, that has created shame and just these young people turning back around and coming back to our community. So, and hearing how much that it actually takes to fund, or how little it takes to fund to keep those young people in school, is it's energizing to think that we can build a fund to keep those people in school by providing that direct support, right? So all these ideas that we hear from Francis and that we would love to partner and figure out a way in order to either bolster what they're doing or create a fund or a grant program to respond again to the needs and aspirations of our people. Another goal of mine within this role is to introduce and clarify and connect outside philanthropy to Wabanaki priorities. I think there's a big need in that clarification, especially the ones that I've interfaced with so far. So ultimately, I think our approach is about that stewardship, and our people always planned ahead, right? Traditionally, we've always planned ahead. So this is trying to take the deliberate approach, grow our corpus, and then sit and listen to our people, to these entities, and to figure out how to properly construct our grant program and our support to individuals, to Wabanaki nonprofits, and even to tribal governments, but really grounding ourselves in community. So, so I think that's kind of like where we're taking this foundation approach, is essentially just trying to build those relationships on the outside to bring back those benefits into our community.
Yeah, we'll do one for that. It's really appreciative because, like, thinking of how, this is a movement of creating culturally relevant economic development for the communities. And, like, with that, like, what I'm hearing is, like, y'all aren't, like, competing with each other, like, in any way. It's like you're really trying to work together as these organizations to really create this flourishing for Wabanaki people and future generations. And with that, didn't necessarily give this in the context or the setting up of this conversation, but I think it's important. And for listeners who are sort of interested in kind of the historical context, there is the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development Research did a report back in 2022 about the economic and social impacts of restrictions on the applicability of federal Indian policies to the Wabanaki Nations in Maine, that I think is really important context for folks to engage with outside of this conversation to kind of have that understanding of how the Land Claim Settlement Act really impacts our abilities for economic development here in our homelands, which adds to the importance of all of the work that y'all are doing. And I wanted to actually loop back to Francis real quick. You were talking about this language of unrestricted grants, and I wondering if you could provide a little bit more context of what that means for folks.
Yeah, I besides telling you that it's unrestricted, I guess I'm not really sure if you're working outside the nonprofit world, if it makes sense. But a lot of funding, especially as we talk about federal funding, I think federal funding and probably state funding as well. A lot of times when we get grants that come into our nonprofits or our tribal governments, there are a lot of rules that you may or may not be aware of before you get that funding on how you can spend that money. Some of it being, how you can pay people, what or what you can buy for it. So, all of our Wabanaki nonprofits, we do our work in using different strategies, but at the heart of what we're doing is that our culture is our medicine and our culture is healing, right? And so one example working at a nonprofit that I worked for a number of years ago, We did have state funding, and I'll use this as an example. We did have state funding to do cultural engagement work with youth. And so Wabanaki communities, if our listeners are familiar with us, we're a very large basket making community in the state of Maine. And so one of the projects that my organization was working on was teaching youth not just how to make the basket, but to go out and harvest their own material so they can identify good basket quality ash, but also understand the work that goes into being a basket maker. It's not just the fun part, the weaving part. I always tell people that weaving is the easiest part of making a basket. It's the identifying and the processing the materials. And so we had this funding from the state to do this work with the youth so they can go out and learn from our knowledge carriers. And the state was totally jazzed about it at first. And then they saw all the things that we wanted to purchase with that funding, and we had to get those purchases pre-approved before we could draw down our money from the state. And the state said, "Well, this is all really great, and we want the youth to be able to learn to do this, but you can't buy axes." So, what do you mean we can't buy axes? We use the axes to pound the ash tree. We use the blunt side of the axe in order to process our materials. We need to be able to buy axes. Why can't we buy them? And the response basically came back to, "Well, you can't buy axes because axes are sharp." Okay, well, we need to buy the sharp objects to process the tree. And so with our funding, we don't have those kind of restrictions. Even through our application process, we ask you to have an idea of how you would spend the money, but we're not so nitty-gritty as we're going to be approving all of your funds once you get it. So once you become one of our grantees, we just send you the check. We let you go about your work. We're here if you need us, but we'll come and we'll touch base throughout the year, or at the end of your project, whatever you need, to just kind of see how your project went. We'd have a very trust-based philanthropy approach. But we're not telling Wabanaki people how they can spend their money. We're allowing Wabanaki people to tell us what they need it for, and we will fund you based on your needs. And so I think that's the best way I can describe the why we need that unrestricted funding, Nolan.
Yeah, thank you. And I was hoping you would also talk about the grant process in terms of like checking for accountability too. That is also very unrestrictive, rather than requiring intensive and arduous grant reports to be written out by communities who are also have all these other projects going on, which is just so important in relation to that too. And Matt, I want to return back to you now and see if you were interested on talking about the Wabanaki Cultural Tourism Initiative, specifically the fellowship program. If there is any sort of work or people or projects that you really wanted to highlight that's going on in Wabanaki country.
I think the fellowship program was something that came out of the initiative that we found. People have a tough time volunteering their time to do work, and the first iteration of our initiative was doing just that. We had asked tribal leaders to designate a volunteer essentially, and we didn't get good participation. And that wasn't the goal. We wanted good participation, so we created the fellowship program to be that community boots on the ground, that person that was tied in with the community, with the cultural elders, youth engagement, someone that really knew how to basically be a conduit for the initiative, so they could go out and get feedback and say, what should we work on? What should we focus on? And the example I gave, the visitor center, was something directly that came out of that fellowship model. They wanted to have more awareness for the Aroostook tribes, the Mi'kmaq Nation, and Haudenosaunee Band of Maliseet. They wanted more recognition when folks came off 95, because there was really nothing. So from that fellowship program, they engaged with the resources in that area, worked with artisans across all five communities, worked on signage, and engaged with the state. Like, it was a really great relationship that they had built. And we hope that we can see more of these physical projects take shape in other communities. We love to see it for, Passamaquoddy. There's a lot of tourism in that area, the cruise ships that land in Eastport. How can there be more cultural awareness and like physical things for people to interact with, and learn more about our culture and what the Wabanaki, are, and that we're here and that we've been stewards of this lands for, since time immemorial. So it's really important to share that narrative and again have these access points, so to speak, for people who aren't aware to engage with. So we hope to see more of it coming down the pipe with the fellowship model. Again, it's a great structure for community to engage with the fellow. We want to get more visibility for these fellows in the community so that, if an elder or basket maker or somebody's like, hey, we want to have folks coming off a cruise ship engage in a basket making workshop. We hope to have the fellow be the one that can help try to identify resources and ways to make that happen.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. And I just want to remind our audience that you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU FM. I am co-host Nick Baer, along with my good Nita, Nolan Altaveda. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today we are talking with Francis Soctoma, Matthew Lewis, and Nick Francis about what sustainable cultural economic development looks like in our homelands here in what is now Maine.
And before we hop into our closing question, I actually want to kick it back to Nick Francis. Understanding the Wabanaki Community Foundation really being a continuation of the efforts with the Dagaga Beemuk or the Katahdin Woods and Waters visitor contact station. And I was wondering if you had any reflections or thoughts about kind of the role that relationship building with philanthropists, really the role of that within this sort of push towards cultural and sustainable economic development, and how that shows up in your work today still too.
Yeah, I think, and thinking back to that project, I haven't asked personally. But I would imagine we were given that very significant donation because of how rewarding that collaboration was, right? It was a very unique experience to have non-Wabanaki people work alongside us. In knowledge, because I believe they went through some sort of training with Dr. Jane Anderson on the front end of things to provide them context and a history of why this place and why attribution is important. So coming out of it, I think it just shows that we as Indigenous people have to open up our doors, and we've always had. But it's also based on trust, right? I think we have to get to a place of trust in order to create these partnerships, these collaborations. And then on the other side, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel as though to be invited into our history, to our stories, to our culture, to share in the values that we bring forth, I think it's a rewarding thing, or at least that's what I seem to find within the non-Indigenous people that participated in that project. So going forth, I think we're riding a very this wave of collaboration, partnership, and understanding. And I think that, going forth, I think to continue to provide those avenues of understanding to non-Indigenous people is going to be vitally important to walk forth together in order to attend to the needs of our communities and create this economic development. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, it does. It really speaks to, the that history of really strained relationships between us as Wabanaki people. And oh, you want to say more about that?
Oh, no, I just wanted to point out too, I think philanthropy for so long has been transactional, right? I think that, and that's, Francis hit upon it with trust-based philanthropy. And I think Matt hits on it too with the like convening. I think getting together, understanding one another, trusting one another, right, is there's so much negative things that are going on in this world, right? And so how do we create these connections that lead to trust? And I think it's just spending time with each other, right, getting in front of each other and telling our individual stories and just take dipping our toes into that trust. Like we're not here to be extractive, and we want this to be much more than transactional. We want a relationship with the outside world, with donors, and so this is the offer that we're coming to the table with, this partnership, and hopefully they see themselves as part of our community at some point.
Yeah, I like how you frame that of how sort of, Wabanaki people, we've always been open to building a relationship of trust with strangers in our homeland. And yeah, really now trying to make sure that that trust isn't exploited in that way. Yeah, just knowing that project was really consisting of a lot of hard relationship building and hard times together. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even on our side of things, we had to look inward, right? Look inward in order to develop these relationships, but also to develop that trust. So,
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, I think it's with each other too, as Wabanaki people, we once had, the Wabanaki Confederacy, and being in diplomacy with each other, that was also interrupted through colonization and really needing to also work on our trust and relationships with each other. And which is why, yeah, I just appreciate having the three of you, hopping on call with each other to have these conversations, and reflect on the work that you all do and the projects that are a result of it. So yeah, thank you for sharing those insights and reflections on that project and how it still shapes sort of your approach to with the Wabanaki Community Foundation. And I wanted to sort of transition into sort of getting closer to the end here with time, just to end our conversation by allowing you all to share how listeners can support your work. If you're on any social media platforms or have any websites or specific communications you'd like people to engage with, or any opportunities that you have for 2026. Does anybody want to start us off here?
Yeah, I'll go. I think, and thanks again for having me. It's very exciting that what you and Nick are creating. So again, thank you. I think one of the most important things that, or the opportunities that people can do is just learn more about our communities. I think that's vitally important as we go forward together. And also, try to identify, the people and entities that are doing the work on the ground right now, from food sovereignty to, I mean, even donating to our food banks, or I know that oil and gasoline is on the uptick, so supporting those programs within our communities that can turn around and provide that support to the individuals. And then, but when it comes to the WCF in 2026, we are launching our capital campaign, which within the next, I believe, month, we'll come out with some sort of public notification of that. And again, we will be working on that for a couple of years, but you can just visit our website for updates. We'll be going and hiring a development manager in the next couple of weeks, and we hope to get the social media out there to spread the word of our existence and our plan for grant making and partnerships, and also to give word about the capital campaign. But on the website is my contact information, so anybody can reach out at any time. So again, thank you for inviting us here today.
Yeah, so I'll put my plug in for the commission too about ways that you can contact us or just learn more about our work. So our website is dawnlandreturn.org. This is a shared website that we have between the Wabanaki Commission on Land and Stewardship and First Light, which is the non-native arm of the work that I mentioned earlier, where you can learn about how we started, the history behind the fund. You can see all of our grantees. You can absolutely follow us on social media, usually on, we're not very active on there right now as we're working on creating content for to keep people engaged. We'll be doing some spotlights of our grantees later on in the future. But you can usually find us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn with just Wabanaki Commission as our handle. But other ways that you can engage us, there's always there's always the opportunity to donate if that's what you feel is within your capacity. But as we're thinking long term about relationships in the state of Maine and really supporting the transfer of resources into Wabanaki communities, if you have a platform where we can come and meet with people and talk about our work, we would really love to do that. Usually we have Wabanaki Commission staff as well as First Light staff who come and talk about where we've been, where we're going. Sometimes we bring along some of our grantees with us. We would love to meet with you and be in community with you so you can learn more about our work and so you can put at least faces to the voices that you're hearing on this radio show.
And I guess I'm next. So Four Directions, you can find us online, fourdirectionsmaine.org, Facebook, the socials, same thing, Four Directions Maine. I think ways to support, I would really stress being an advocate for the Wabanaki and tribal sovereignty. Nolan, you alluded to it. There's so much economic harm that's been done by the Settlement Act, and there's a lot of economic healing that needs to be done. And, we won't truly realize that until the tribes have true tribal sovereignty in the state of Maine. And I encourage you people again to read that Harvard report. Get upset about it, because there's a lot of stark realities of what's occurred because of the Settlement Act. So be advocates. When you vote, find folks that support tribal sovereignty in both the state Senate and representatives. So I'd encourage that. That's the best way that folks can support economic development for the tribal communities.
Actually, can I add one more thing to that, Matt, too? Because when you're talking about, voting for candidates, when you're looking at your candidates, especially when we're in our midterms and our elections coming up, it's really important as you're looking into those candidates too, that they're not just saying that they support Wabanaki communities, that they have a demonstrated history of engaging with our communities respectfully. I don't know how many times I get frustrated when I see a candidate come up and they say, "I support Wabanaki tribal sovereignty." And my response as a Passamaquoddy person is, "I've never heard of you." So there does have to be a demonstrated history or at least pointed questions when you're engaging with them about how they support Wabanaki people in 2026 and beyond.
Yes, thank you for that, Francis. And Matt, you are on, you have a website, correct?
Yes, yeah, fourdirectionsmaine.org. Yep.
Sweet. Perfect. Before we wrap up here today, is there anything that y'all would like to share that we may have missed, or anything you'd like to add to our conversation here?
Just thank you for the space. Time to have conversation with, good friends and colleagues. To talk about our work, and we're all very passionate about it. And so just a place of gratitude from me.
Yeah, I'll second that. It's great to be in a quote unquote room with Matt and Francis and to hear about their organizations and how we can again respond as part of an ecosystem or the circle together to the needs of our community and people. So thanks again, guys.
Yeah, and I think for me, I also just want to express gratitude for sharing this space. It's always great when I get to hear from other Wabanaki organizations doing the same work or doing similar work in different ways for our communities. But I think, listening to everyone here in this room, I think I just want to drive home the fact that when we're working for Wabanaki community, how important that community led process is. And so if there are ways that people want to engage, do it from that community-based mindset. I think we can't do any of this work alone, as much as I think people might think that would be easier, but we do need the support of our greater community and people who are in Wabanaki homelands.
Yeah, I couldn't echo and feel for that more. And yeah, I know I'm very appreciative for y'all to take the time out of your busy schedules and the important work that y'all do. And just the ability to come together to talk about these things. I hope to see it, across more organizations who are doing similar work, Wabanaki-led organizations, that is. We get caught up so much in our day-to-day where we don't really have this time to come together and speak. So yeah, I just want to say Gachi Willy One to all of you. Thank you very much for speaking with my Nidub Nick and myself. I want to thank you to our listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. We had the chance to talk today with Matthew Lewis, Francis Auchtoma, and Nick Francis about what sustainable cultural economic development looks like here in our homelands in what is now Maine. I want to give a big shout out and thank you to our volunteer technician, Scarlett Tudor, for her assistance and support. And I want to remind our audience to be sure to join us next month, May 7th, for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Stay tuned for more great programming here on WERU-FM. Abjudge, abjudge, gnomial.
Objection.